Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
And welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you by Myers & Associates, serving the Midwest with industrial maintenance products and services. Call them at 515-795-3676. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running. Hey, this is Shane Vanderhart. Welcome to another week of Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Got Ron with us. And Brian was going to be here, but he called me and said, "Hey, Shane, I'm having car issues."
Oh, man.
His car was running, but he had to drive it directly to the mechanic rather than driving down here, or else his car would be stuck. A belt problem or something like that. But, yeah, so I know we all miss Brian because I think he's, what, the last 5 weeks he's been with us once, I think.
Yeah, something like that.
So
yeah.
I think he just doesn't like us and he just doesn't want to say. So hopefully he'll be back next week.
Indeed.
We're recording a little bit early since it's Thanksgiving week. I'm going to be out of town Friday and we just wanted to take some time off. So hopefully when you hear this, you've had a happy Thanksgiving. I know hopefully I'll have a good trip down to Kansas City. We're doing something a little bit different, going to Great Wolf Lodge.
Oh.
We didn't get a vacation this summer, so we thought since my oldest daughter will be back from college, that we would take some time and go travel. We'll do a little traveling as a family, so that'll be fun. My son, the bozo's got to work, so he can't go with us.
I kind of know how that feels.
Yeah. It's like, is this good? How it's always going to be? Now I can understand why my mom's frustrated getting us together as a family.
Sure.
I'm like, I'm already experiencing this, and we don't even have grandkids yet. So it's crazy. This week's been interesting. I'm going to have a repair guy come in later today to my house because I took a shower. I won't give you details. But I went downstairs and I was going to do some laundry, and there was this flood. Not flood. It just majorly wet. We get some water in our basement when it rains a lot, but
sure.
But this, I noticed it was totally bone dry where it normally comes from. So I'm like, oh, and I noticed there was water splatter.
Uh-huh.
Which, like, oh no. So I had my daughter was at home. I said, "Can you turn on the shower real quick?" She turned it on and I said, "Stop, stop, stop." Water was just, spraying out of this pipe. So I'm hoping it's easy replace the pipe. But yeah, that's going to be fun. I'm praying that guy gets that done before tonight, since we're going to be leaving.
Yes, absolutely.
Because we ended up renting a hotel room just so, I was like, I'd like to shower.
Yeah.
That's kind of a necessity. I'm sure you appreciate it. So
absolutely. I do. Yes.
Hygiene. It's a wonderful thing. Yeah. So who's your internet service provider?
Really interesting. Windstream.
Windstream. Okay.
Yeah. Which is really CenturyLink, but yeah.
Okay, yeah, yeah, because I don't think I can get them in Pleasant Hill. I found that I'm stuck in a monopoly, Mediacom.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have a love-hate relationship with Mediacom. when their service, when it works, it's great, because it's 100 megabytes per second speed, so I got the fastest speed, which since I upload a lot of videos, and that's important to me.
Yeah.
When it doesn't work, and it seems like that's frequently, it's really frustrating. Well, last week it was down, my internet was down, and usually they're pretty responsive with social media, but if you run social media for your business or organization, I just want to give you a tip of what not to do. Don't respond 5 days later. I got a tweet back from them saying, "Oh, we find that you're online. There's and your internet's right." It's like, well, duh, because I tweeted you 5 days ago. I ended up calling.
Yeah.
It's like, you'd be better off not even responding if you're going to respond that late. So anyway, just what not to do if you do run social media for and use it for customer service anyway. Well, I could go on and on about MediaCom, but we got a guest on the line who he may have his own opinion about MediaCom. Not that we're going to talk about that, but I'm sure he has something to say about monopolies. Not that we're going to talk about that either. But Drew Klein, he's like, what are we going to talk about? Drew Klein, he's the Iowa State Director for Americans for Prosperity, and he's probably wondering, why in the world am I on this show? Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, Drew.
Hey, thanks for having me back. Yeah, certainly not my first trip to the rodeo, so I try to come prepared with answers for any question you throw at me.
Yeah, I was just like, oh, yeah, what do you think about monopolies? It's weird because I actually looked into getting CenturyLink, and they told me at Pleasant Hill, well, we only have so many lines, and so apparently they're capped at how much service they could provide in Pleasant Hill, which I thought that was interesting. So I'm literally stuck with MediaCom unless I do satellite internet, which, yeah, no thank you. So weird.
New providers popping up all of the time. If there's a market, somebody will find a way to make a buck.
Yeah, well, you know, it's strange. Their website said, CenturyLink's website said, oh, we offer service in Pleasant Hill, but then when I call, and it's like, oh, we can't do anything. So I'm hoping that changes just because monopolies.
Now, did they give you that answer before or after you gave them your name?
Before.
Okay, all right.
What are you saying? Are you saying they don't want to do service with me?
I was just, you know, hypothesis.
It's like, we don't want to give this guy internet access. I mean, better if he gets totally cut off.
I hear he has a Twitter account.
Yeah, yeah. He might tweet at us and say mean things. So anyway, hey, collective bargaining, you guys have been, I know you recently wrote an op-ed and I think it was Des Moines Register, regarding collective bargaining and the state government. And then you also, had something to say about Iowa's counteroffering with union contract negotiations. Just wanted to talk to you a little bit about that with, obviously we're going to, our legislative, that's not the word I'm looking for. Basically, the scene is set for this year to actually maybe be able to accomplish some things.
Yeah.
So what are you guys hoping to be able to accomplish, or you'd like to see the state legislature accomplish this year now we have Republican Senate and Republican House?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, we're pretty excited about the situation coming into the legislative session, you know, in January that finally we have, seemingly removed the roadblock in the Iowa Senate. At least that's certainly what we've been being told is why we can't move forward on, you know, good conservative values and conservative principles in the legislature. And quite frankly, I have a lot of hope for, you know, for the new majority in the Senate and certainly the leadership we've been working with in the House as well. And so I think there are a number of things, but yeah, collective bargaining is a very interesting one and probably one that, you know, a lot of folks that, you know, unless you're a member of the government union, you probably haven't thought a whole lot about collective bargaining. But,
right,
you know, really, when we look at this issue, we see a big problem in the sense that we have, you know, we have a big problem in Iowa when it comes to budgeting. We don't have a lot of economic growth, but we can't seem to get our arms around controlling spending. And what we find out is that the cost of state government is really an enormous driver in that entire discussion. And unfortunately, with our collective bargaining legislation, the way it is, our collective bargaining laws, really legislators have no control over a lot of the costs associated with state government labor contracts. These are negotiated by the Department of Administrative Services and really are handled in a very unaccountable way as far as anybody actually having an opportunity to bargain on behalf of the taxpayers in a real genuine way. And so we see this as a big issue, is protecting the taxpayers from the ever-growing cost of state government, as well as just making sure that we can start to rein in the size of government overall. Right now, Iowa has, you know, pretty steep ratio, especially compared to our neighbors, as far as the the number of state employees to citizens, and without reforming collective bargaining, that's another issue that we're just never really going to be able to get our arms around. So it's really a multifaceted issue, but at the end of the day, it is, it's the belief that, if we're going to have a bargaining table, that people on both sides of the table have to have skin in the game. And right now, taxpayers just aren't represented.
You're listening to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, and on the line we have Drew Klein with Americans for Prosperity. We're talking about collective bargaining and state employees. Someone might say, well, you got the governor. He's representing taxpayers, isn't he? Why is it important to have legislature?
Well, the reality is the governor himself is not directly involved in these negotiations either. It's certainly handled by the Department of Administrative Services, which is, theoretically linked to the executive branch.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not the same way. And we recognize that really it's the legislature that needs to be holding the purse strings either way anyway.
True.
And this is not the left is going to cry that this is really just an assault on government unions and we want to crack down on workers' rights. But, there are states across the country where public employees are not allowed to collective bargaining, and they still have police officers, they still have firefighters, they still have state government. This is just making sure that we control the scope of that bargaining,
right,
and that we make sure that legislators who are the most immediately accountable individuals in state government, that they're the ones that are really controlling the cost of that entire process.
What states have recently done this? Because I know Wisconsin, for instance, did some reforms, but Wisconsin wasn't a right-to-work state at the time, so they had probably different issues they're addressing. I know Michigan just, adopted right-to-work. But some states that maybe were already right-to-work but already had, different collective bargaining laws that they were trying to reform. Can you think of any examples?
Yeah, certainly Wisconsin did it in a slightly different order. They did right to work after they did collective bargaining, but it's still a phenomenal case study in kind of what we're looking at and how we want to make sure that we're controlling for the cost of government. So in Wisconsin, since Act 10, which was the big collective bargaining mm-hmm. budget reform bill, which passed in went through in I'm going to forget the exact date. It was either late 2011, early 2012.
Mm-hmm.
That, of course, led to the eruption of, the recalls of Governor Walker and a number of Republican state senators up in that area, around the state. Kind of blew up. You have all of these union protesters with their spray paint and bongo drums in the Capitol up in Madison, really just kind of acting childish over what really is a really common sense reform, making sure that legislators are accountable for tax dollars.
And
since that point, Wisconsin has completely turned around their financial picture. They have, they now have reduced the cost of state government by $2,000 per citizen in Wisconsin. They've watched their employment rate take off just as a result of getting their overall budget in place and having some room to do some tax reduction and things like that as well. Wisconsin, they're certainly not the fastest growing state in the country, but they have dramatically changed their economic outlook based on really some simple reforms that they enacted a couple of years ago. And from a, from a partisan perspective, Republican legislators should recognize as well that they've been rewarded by the voters in their state as well, that Governor Walker has now been, I feel like he's been reelected 8 times in 4 years.
Seems that way.
Like that.
Yeah.
And they're expanding, Republican majorities are expanding in the legislature as well. So, it turns out good policy is good politics. And this is certainly going to be a tough battle in the Capitol because you have such deeply entrenched special interest groups. But doing the right thing is always the right thing to do.
Well, and definitely, we saw this election, Wisconsin definitely turned red for like the very first time across the board, having, reelected Senator Ron Johnson, who personally leading up right before Election Day, I thought he was toast. And then, of course, Trump won Wisconsin, which I can't remember last time Wisconsin voted for a Republican president or nominee. So that And I think a lot of credit goes to Governor Walker and the Wisconsin legislative Republicans for these economic reforms, for the collective bargaining reforms that have taken place, because obviously Wisconsin's have seen that economic plan works. And that's been the Republican brand. Hopefully Republicans stick to that. Do you think we have the stomach for the outcry and the protesting that's probably going to happen if they move on this?
I hope so. And you know, quite frankly, that's what I view the role of Americans for Prosperity being in many regards, is making sure that, you know, that when necessary, legislators feel the heat to do the right thing, but also that we're out there, you know, talking about these issues outside of the Capitol as well to help build the public case for why this needs to be done, and to make sure we thank legislators when they do the right thing as well. You know, the left, I'm sure, will always be able to dig up a statistic about why something was bad for somebody.
Right.
But we can go out and tell the story of how these reforms are actually benefiting people, you know, on a broad base. And I think that really overcomes a lot of the hysteria that's going to take place in the Capitol over some of these things. Quite frankly, I don't think this is that difficult to go out and sell in your district as well. The reality is, we have a state budget that has grown much faster than the economy in Iowa, certainly much faster than population. It's outpacing, real economic growth and just personal household economics. And we have to do something to be able to address that.
All right. Hey, this is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back in a moment with Drew Klein. He'll be staying online. We're going to talk about school choice. Thanks, Drew. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Brian Myers of Myers & Associates. If you're involved in maintenance at a manufacturing plant, you know how costly it can be when a machine goes down. And if the reason that machine went down is because the electronic controls on it failed, it can really be problematic if those electronics are obsolete. Well, not to worry. We represent Providence Industrial Electronics Repair, and they can get your machine up and running in no time. They repair boards, drives, servo motors, light curtains, you name it. So if you need industrial electronics repaired at your plant, or if you have other industrial maintenance needs, give me a call at 515-490-2640. That's Myers & Associates, 515-490-2640. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running.
Back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Travis Riswold of Modern Woodmen of America. Call Travis at 515-883-0029, and he can help you find the life insurance you need. So we've got Drew Klein still on the line with us, right, Drew? Still with us?
Absolutely. Clear.
Awesome. And we were talking about collective bargaining. So just in a nutshell, just kind of wrap up for us, what do you absolutely want to see happen with collective bargaining, and then what are some of the other reforms and initiatives and priorities that Americans for Prosperity has for this legislative session?
Yeah, I think there's still a lot of work to be done to figure out exactly how we reform Chapter 20 in the Iowa Code, which is where all of that collective bargaining language is housed. But absolutely, we have to reduce the scope of the bargaining so that not so much is on the table. Healthcare benefits is a big one that comes up. And right now, if you're an employee of the state, you've been completely insulated from the skyrocketing cost of healthcare because it's just built into your contracts that you're going to pay virtually nothing for your health insurance benefits.
Right.
So, we've got to get our arms around that. And more than anything, we've got to make sure that legislators are involved in placing some stamp of approval on these contracts overall so that they have an opportunity to really manage the state budget in a productive way. And really, that's that's kind of the common theme with a lot of our big priorities. You know, we want to look at tax reform and how we can really get the economy growing again. And you know, then one that maybe veers a little bit outside of just the pure economic side of things as well is looking at expanding school choice in Iowa, you know, through what, you know, many think of as a voucher program. We really view it as kind of a new model for that is education savings accounts and really giving, empowering parents to start making the best choice for their child's education to set them up for success so that we're not treating every student as though they all learn the same way, which is really the system of public education at this point.
Right, yeah, because, well, a couple things regarding the vouchers. I know right now vouchers would probably face a constitutional challenge, mainly because of the Blaine Amendment here in Iowa that frankly needs to be repealed because it was initially introduced because of anti-Catholic sentiment. But it basically prohibits you know, public money going directly to a religious school. And at that time, it was targeting Catholic schools. So ESAs are kind of that kind of bypasses that, right? Because it's instead of money to money to the schools, it's money. It's money set up into a parent's an account. I'll let you. Why don't you flesh out what these look like?
Yeah, the easiest way I think to explain education savings accounts is most of your listeners are probably really familiar with like a flex spending account for healthcare.
Right.
And an ESA works really in much the same way. So what would happen under an education savings account plan in Iowa is that the state dollars that are currently being spent per pupil on education, which is about $6,000, instead of those just blindly being poured into public schools based on enrollment numbers, instead, if I decided that, you know, my child would probably be better served at school XYZ rather than the public school that happens to coincide with my zip code, what would happen is I would then enroll in this education savings account program. I would get a debit card, in essence, that would have that $6,000 loaded on it. And then I now am empowered to go out and shop for the best education that I can find for my daughters. And so there would be certainly some restrictions. You know, qualified education expenses are what we're going to be paying for in this sense. To your previous point, it gets around a lot of those Blaine Amendment issues because now the state is not giving money to a religious institution. What they're really doing is just giving it back to the parents and really recognizing that parents, you're the ones that need to be driving the education of your child.
Right.
And so we're going to give you the ability to do that.
And you know, parents with some of these expenses could be, well, you know, each bill I've seen introduced is a little bit different, but a full-throated ESA, you know, would be something you could use to homeschool by, you know, using it for curriculum. You could use it to pay for a tutor. You can pay for online classes, private school tuition. You know, there's a whole there's a whole laundry list of things that that money could be used for. And it just I think my personal opinion is I like ESAs far better than I even like vouchers because it really expands options for parents. Now, I know some pushback I hear from education activists, especially ones who are opposed to Common Core. What about strings that are attached?
Yeah, I mean, that's always a concern anytime we get involved in this. And I think, you know, I think that's a minor concern with education savings accounts because really we're empowering parents. And so, you know, we've been very clear with legislators as we talk to them, as well as, you know, some of our other coalition members, in talking to this is that if this is really going to work, if this is going to improve educational outcomes, then you can't have the state trying to direct everything. You can't turn private schools into public schools and expect outcomes to change. And so I think that's a really fundamental aspect that we've been trying to drive with legislators and making sure that, you know, we don't start to see a lot of regulatory overreach. You know, this is a concern that gets raised a lot when it comes to like homeschooling, for instance, which currently is what we're doing with our daughters. Mm-hmm. And I guess to that extent, I would say, you know, there's really no downside. If we pass an education savings account bill and then sometime down the road, they start, you know, attaching strings to it, yeah, it's going to feel like we've taken steps back, but we're not going to be worse off than where we were. And I think this really just starts to change the mental model when it comes to education, you know, overall.
Yeah.
Is that education is not... it's not our duty to hand our children over to the state to have them educated anymore. It's now our right and our responsibility to make sure that we're actively engaged in our children's education and making sure that we're finding a setting that meets their needs, whether that's in our home, whether that's in a private school, whether that's an online option. And if none of those work, if your public school is great, well, that's still going to be there too.
Right. Hey, you're listening to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, and on the line we have Drew Klein. We're talking about education savings accounts and school choice. You hit upon a great point that, you know, it's parents' right and responsibility to educate their children. I think, you know, I wish parents would, a lot of parents would grasp that even without a ESA.
Well, and some of it, you know, to be honest, is the state has told them for so long that this isn't really something that you get a say in.
True.
And so this really opens up the system and allows them to be responsible for their child's education, where in many cases, and unless, of course, you can afford to pay for that private school tuition, you really don't have a say in the education that your kids are getting at the public school right now.
Unfortunately, true, because, you know, we've seen school boards literally become nothing more than they basically, you know, keep the lights on and they do building policy, but have very little to do with education policy anymore. A lot of it's been centralized at the state level. A lot of times teachers don't, or the curriculum, you know, curriculum review committees, you know, a lot of times I don't think necessarily listen to parents as well. Hopefully, you know, parents need to be squeaky wheels, though. And this is something I said when I was a youth pastor, and we talk about these issues, because I've always homeschooled, but I've always told parents not everybody is called to homeschool, because it definitely is a calling, and it's definitely a sacrifice, worthwhile sacrifice, but sacrifice nonetheless. However, you as a parent, you got to be involved, whether it's at the public, whether it's public school, whether it's private school, whether it's homeschool, you can't abdicate your responsibility. So in a public school setting, that means, you know, if you've got to be the annoying person, that's what you need to be. Nobody else is going to be advocate for your child, right?
Well, and I think, you know, one of the really important aspects of this as well is that this now introduces a concept of competition within education at the state level as well. And you know, we know, and maybe I'm dragging this a little bit back towards economics, but if resources are on the line, then I think school boards and administrators are going to have to become more responsive to the requests of parents that stay in the public school as well, because there's now a viable threat that they could walk out the door and take their business somewhere else.
Right, right. And, well, you know, I know there's public school folks are concerned this is going to diminish public education, and while I'm not sure I would cry a river if that actually did happen, I don't think it will. Because, for instance, I remember reading an article in Governing Magazine about a school choice education savings account or something like that in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. Edmonton, they launched this program, and instead of, you know, public schools didn't close, actually some private schools closed because public schools were forced to improve, and private schools improved, and those that couldn't improve and provide a good product, so to speak, for the consumer, you know, they failed, just like any business would. So if you're a public school advocate, don't assume that this is going to, you know, this kind of a program would hurt public schools. I think it'll all just create, you know, all ships will rise as a result of this.
Yeah, absolutely. And the research says exactly that. There are a number of high quality peer reviewed studies. You know, a good resource if people want to look into this is an organization called EdChoice. Used to be the Friedman Foundation. Mm-hmm. EdChoice.org. And they have a lot of their research available right there on the website. Not research that they've done in-house, but research that they've accumulated from outside sources. And absolutely, most of the vast majority of the research shows that school choice either has no impact on public schools or it has a positive impact on public schools.
Right.
And you can think about it from two different ways. There's a competition side of it where, you know, folks realize that gosh, we have to earn, you know, the business, the loyalty of these families. But also from a financial standpoint, if you look at the funding formula in Iowa, which, you know, if you're having a hard time sleeping some night, definitely crack that open and take a look. But actually, you're going to end up with higher per pupil spending in the public schools as a result of this, because we're only talking about moving that state per pupil funding into that ESA. So you're still going to have the local dollars from property taxes and those things. You're still going to have the federal dollars flowing in. And quite frankly, if I were a public school teacher, I would want to make sure that our students were in the best setting that meets their needs, because that means I'm going to spend less time, you know, having to deal with folks that just don't fit the mold of what we're trying to do in the public classroom.
Right. And, you know, and they'll probably hopefully maybe even end up with some smaller class sizes as a result as well. What do you think is realistic to get started? Because I know, you know, we had various attempts. I know last session they tried to launch a, you know, a pilot program in Waterloo, and I think
Sioux County.
Sioux County. Do you think we can accomplish something like this statewide, or are we gonna have to look at a pilot program first?
No. I've been a loud voice against the pilot program. I think this is going to be an extremely popular, successful program. And so I think, you know, we can't wait to try to piecemeal this district by district. I mean, there are students right now that the public school just isn't meeting their needs. And so I think the goal is to make this as universal as possible, as quickly as possible. Now, certainly there are some financial constraints, and so maybe we have to phase that in, you know, a few grade levels at a time, you know, over the course of a couple of years. But I think we absolutely can get this enacted statewide in a universal fashion in 2017, even if the phase in may take a couple of years. And I think we can also make sure that homeschoolers get to participate in this as well, so that they're not paying taxes and then being left out in the cold. Now, I don't know if that's necessarily going to be the full amount, but gosh, I can tell you as a dad that's been buying some curriculum for the last couple of
years.
Even
a little bit would help.
Yeah, man, even half of that amount would buy more curriculum than my kids can work through in a year right now. So.
I mean, I would love to even been able to take a tax, you know, deduction. They don't even allow that. It's just... It's insane. It's like, give me the same tax deduction you give teachers when they buy materials. Nope.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I know there's some homeschool. You know, believe it or not, homeschoolers aren't all on the same page with things. And some are concerned about you know, policies like this. But hey, the nice thing with choice is you don't even have to use it if you don't want to. You know,
this is absolutely a net benefit.
Anyway, thanks for coming on, Drew. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be back in a moment.
Thanks so much for having me.
You're very welcome.
Hi, this is Brian Myers. When I needed a better life insurance plan, I found it with Travis Risvold of Modern Woodmen of America. When I first met Travis, he wasn't like some other life insurance agents that can be pushy and try to get you to buy something. Travis just made himself available to me. That was it. He told me to let him know if and when I needed anything, and he stayed in touch. When the day came and I did need to make some changes with my life insurance, Travis met with me and walked me through several options so I could make an informed decision. Ultimately, it was the best decision for my situation. So if you need a better or the best life insurance plan for you, call my friend Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. His number is 515-883-0029. Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Call him at 515-883-0029.
Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
And welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Crosswalk Ministries with Scott Owen, who offers biblical counseling and conciliation. Give him a call at 515-292-7141 or go to crosswalkcounseling.org. Well,
I have to admit, Ron, that I have been pretty happy so far with President-elect Trump's cabinet picks.
Great.
So far, I think we talked about last week, a short-term mm-hmm. memory loss. I can't remember. he appointed attorney general or two attorney general, or he announces he intends to nominate. I guess that's how you got to put it, until he's actually sworn in, and then he nominates. U.S. Senator Jeff Sessions out mm-hmm. of Alabama. He's going to Democrats are definitely going to challenge his nomination. As we heard from Senator Elizabeth Warren out of Massachusetts, I know he's got a lot of things to say about Jeff Sessions. I personally think he's a good pick. I mean, my goodness, he was a former federal prosecutor, and he's former attorney general of Alabama.
Yeah.
I don't know what kind of qualifications you're looking for, what Democrats are looking for, other than somebody that fits within their ideology, which I'm sorry, that's not going to happen. You lost the election.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
So, yeah. So, you know, are there some other people that could fill that role? Yeah, I think Trump probably had, there's probably a number of qualified people he could look at that I would be happy with. CIA director, I don't think that's a cabinet level position. I don't remember if it's going to be a cabinet level position under Trump administration or not, but Congressman Mike Pompeo is going to be the CIA director upon confirmation. National Security Advisor, again, not a cabinet position or even confirmable, but retired Lieutenant General Mike Flynn will be in that role. That's not a surprise, since he's kind of a continuation from the campaign.
Sure.
Announced right before we went to record, South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley will be our next, if she's confirmed, will be our next UN ambassador.
Yep.
Not a conventional pick. Not somebody I would have thought of on, and if I were creating a short list of people who get that role, I haven't really pondered UN ambassador all that much. I'm mm-hmm. actually kind of surprised that was announced before the Secretary of State. But he's keeping UN ambassador as a cabinet level position. The Obama administration, it's been a cabinet level position. It wasn't a cabinet level position under Presidents George H.W. Bush or George W. Bush. I think it was elevated to cabinet position by Jimmy Carter, I believe.
Okay.
I have mixed feelings about it. On one hand, I see the pros that it gives the U.S. ambassador more direct access to the president. So he doesn't have to have information about what's going on at the UN filtered through the State Department.
Right.
But on the other hand, it's almost, you'd think you'd want your foreign policy being led by one person. So I also see the benefit of having the UN ambassador under the Secretary of State as well. However, you probably lose the ability to attract certain types of people who would rather report directly to the president rather than under a secretary. That could be an issue too. So anyway, I thought that was interesting. I think it's interesting that he picked the governor. Usually roles like that goes to somebody, who has some foreign policy experience.
Right.
Nikki Haley, yes, she's led some, international trade missions, but governors just don't have the foreign policy experience. Whether that's absolutely necessary in this role, that will remain to be seen. Can she do well in this role? He certainly could have done worse. So I'm not against this pick. I think it's interesting. I think it also kind of sets a tone that people who are criticizing him for potentially having an all-white, all-male cabinet, well, that's been kind of shot down.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously she's not, male, and she's an Indian American.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be, it's going to be interesting. But also too, he's not filling his cabinet full of Trump loyalists, because Nikki Haley supported Marco Rubio before the South Carolina primary, and then supported Ted Cruz after Rubio dropped out. So. She never really got on the Trump train. I think in the general election she supported him, but wasn't a Trump loyalist from the get go.
Mm-hmm.
But also, you know, there's some other names that have been brought up that aren't Trump loyalists either. Mitt Romney is the kind of leading candidate for Secretary of State.
Yep.
I know. Personally, I think that, you know, again, kind of same thing with Nikki Haley. My beef with maybe him being in that role is lacking foreign policy experience. However, you know, some people are concerned, well, it's Mitt Romney and he's, you know, he's not as conservative. It's like, in this role, I don't think that matters so much, provided he's on, you know, on board with Trump's foreign policy, which he'd have to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he would actually be a good, you know, person to send to, you know, other nations on behalf of the United States. He's measured. He's professional. He's acted like an adult. He's got good temperament. So I would not personally have a problem with him being Secretary of State. Ben Carson, who originally said he wasn't interested in the cabinet position, now has been asked if he would be according to news reports, the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development.
Wow.
And he's considering that. So we'll probably get word of whether he's going to do that or not next week. That is not a role I initially thought of. You know, I thought more Health and Human Services.
Mm-hmm.
But I could see that. He certainly, you know, he's got some background in that area and knowledge and passion in that area. So I could definitely see that. Retired General James Mattis has been discussed for Secretary of Defense, and he's a very highly respected general, decorated general. I think that would be a great choice, and somebody who knows the Department of Defense inside and out. Mm-hmm. So he's obviously a civilian now, so he can legally be appointed to that role. You know, because I've not been a big fan of appointing civilians who have never had any military experience. At the Defense Department. So all those are good, you know, I think, decent choices. However, the Secretary of Education position is kind of a big question mark for me. Betty DeVos right now is being floated, and there's rumors saying that, you know, that she's going to possibly be announced to be the next Secretary of Education. And for somebody, Trump, who has advocated, you know, has been spoken out against Common Core, to appoint somebody who's pro Common Core, it's like, that's, wow. Why would you do that?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping there are better options, like Williamson Evers with Hoover Institution, Stanford University. Dr. Larry Arn with Hillsdale College has been discussed. I think either one of those guys would make a fabulous Secretary of State. So I hope he considers those. But anyway, so far, it's been pretty good. The transition has been good. I know he's kind of backed away from some promises, and I'm not going to hit him too hard on that until he actually does that. Because until he actually governs, we don't really know what he's going to do. But
do you think the Voss thing might be gender related for that choice?
Possibly. You know, but there's even Dr. Sandra Stotsky would make a better Secretary of Education.
Yep.
Dr. Peg Lusick, I think that's how you pronounce her last name, would make a better Secretary of Education. So there's some other options. Those two names haven't been floated as being on a short list, though. Larry Arn and Williamson Evers have. And, mm-hmm. and frankly, those are the two best names he's probably got on his list.
Sure.
The others are kind of, they'd be a crap sandwich. So I'm hoping he appoints somebody better. Anyway, stay tuned. We'll be back. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Put me on the cover of the Rolling Stone, Uptown, Down Home, American Kids.
There are times in a conflict when the emotional drain has left you with the been there, done that, got the t-shirt attitude. Your creativity has been totally zapped and you cannot think of any solution other than the ones that you've tried over and over again. I'm Scott Owen with Crosswalk Ministries of Central Iowa, and it's time to pause for peace. The letter S in the Pause for Peace principle is to search for creative solutions. This will require you to explore a little outside of the box you have erected around this conflict. The best solution might be an outlier to the typical win-win or 50-50 propositions. You might benefit from additional set of eyes on the problem. So if we can help, please feel free to call us at 515-635-5465 to set up a free consultation or visit our website at crosswalkcounseling.org. Again, that number, 515-635-5465.
Hey, do you want to take advantage of the marketing potential within social media for your company or organization, but you're not so sure how? Let me help. My company, 415 Communications, is a social media consulting firm that works with groups like yours. Go to 415communications.com or give me a call at 515-321-5077. And now we've come to my favorite part of the show. We're about to share a story that is truly unbelievable, yet you know it must be true because
you can't make this stuff up.
This is from Odell, Nebraska, UPI reporting. A Pennsylvania truck driver was arrested for allegedly dumping nearly 1,000 bushels of corn on a Nebraska road after he was fired via text message. Authorities said Darren Walp, age 36, was arrested last week in connection with the early August incident on Highway 8 in rural Gage County. The arrest warrant said Walp had been driving the load of corn in a Peterbilt truck for B&T Livingston Trucking, LLC, when he received a text message August 4th telling him that he had been fired. "Pack your stuff ASAP and you can leave," the police report quoted the Texas reading. Walp had been taking the load of corn to Hanover, Kansas, then allegedly dumped the entire load of corn, nearly 1,000 bushels, on the westbound lane Highway 8, about half a mile west of Odell. The corn was spread out over about a quarter of a mile due to the driver speeding off with the truck's back doors open, the authorities said. The lost corn was valued at $3,094, while the cost of cleanup was estimated about $500. Walp was charged with felony criminal mischief and depositing materials on a roadway or ditch. So, moral of the story here.
Timing is everything.
Timing
right?
is everything. If you're going to fire somebody, you should probably fire them after they've done their job. Just saying.
Yeah.
Don't think that would have been too hard to do. And also, just for interpersonal communication's sake, it's best not to do that by text message.
Right.
I can't say I've got a whole lot of experience in firing people. I've had to let one person go as a result, and that was face-to-face, and that was hard. But I couldn't even imagine doing that impersonally by text message. The only person that helps is the person who's doing the firing.
Right.
It just makes matters worse for the person getting fired, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Not that it makes it any easier, certainly. But allows them to ask questions and things like that. We got a little bit of time here. From Amherst, this is not necessarily, you can't make this stuff up, but it should be. The American flag is a symbol of fear. Hampshire College, the school's board of trustees, made a decision to lower the U.S. flag on campus to have staff in the wake of the presidential election, and then decided to remove the flag entirely after a wave of backlash. Hampshire College President Jonathan Lash told WBZ News Radio he knows it's a controversial decision to remove the flag, but he wanted to create a dialogue among those with differing opinions about the symbol.
Sure.
There are a range of views on campus, but it seems like they only represent the liberal ones and the crazy ones.
Yeah.
Crazy, he says, including people who experienced growing up have made the flag a symbol of fear, which was strengthened by the toxic language during the campaign, and people for whom the flag is a symbol of all that's best throughout the country. Anyway, it provokes something.
Yeah, obviously.
But I'm not sure it's going to provoke meaningful and respectful dialogue on campus.
What a deal.
That's Hampshire College. That's crazy.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's New England for you. And New England liberals, they're even kookier than normal liberals. So, hey, this is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. If you have a story you'd like to share, send it to story@caffeinatedthoughts.com. We'll give you the credit or the blame if we use your suggestion on the show. Hey, see you next week, everybody. It's been great.